but I want people to know what's going to happen already. The moment you start the film is the moment you know what's going to happen right at the end. But I want them to be so immersed in the characters that you know what's going to happen, but you fall deeper in love, only to be broken at the end. As broken as the character is, I want my audience to be as broken as that.
Welcome back to another episode of the Statues Podcast. I have my co-host once again, Crystal. And today I wanted to start with a little clip that I found that I think is very relevant to what I want to talk about today.
I think that as humans, without exception, we struggle with mortality. I even go so far as to say that I think our human existence is a prank on us because we only have one instinct, which is to survive, and we only have one guarantee, which is we won't. That's probably the main reason why people, they have children, because they want part of them to live on, to have a legacy. And other people turn to religion to say that even though you're gonna die, you're gonna go to heaven where everything's gonna be great. And neither of those two really worked for me. So I fall into the third category I identify with, which is those who leave stuff behind to be remembered by. And, you know, I point to cavemen who would draw stick figures on the wall in the cave, evidently because they knew those stick figures would outlive them.
Yeah, so I wanted to start with that clip. One of the reasons why I wanted to start with that clip was because last episode we were talking about like how I write sad scripts.
Yeah.
Right. But the way I look at my life and the way I've always kind of looked at my life was kind of exactly like how he said it was. The moment I first encountered what death looked like, I knew that when a person died, you would die. You left nothing if you had nothing. Even when you have money and you have all this kind of stuff. Like, I grew up with like my dad telling me all the time, when you die, you'll die with nothing. All the riches that you have will not go with you into the afterlife. And so I grew up with the mentality, just like my grandfather and my dad, that you build a legacy. You build a legacy so that you leave it behind for your kids or for other people. And so my entire career has been based off that belief that I know that life has an end. It's not that it doesn't. I've lived basically my entire career, and even in high school, knowing that, I've lived in a way where I understood that the moment I was born was the moment that death was coming. Mm-hmm. Every day that I live is just another day closer to death. I could die today, I could die tomorrow. But that's just the way I've looked at life. But that's also why I appreciate sad romantic movies. So last episode we were talking about how I like watching like a lot of really sad romantic movies.
Yeah.
And the reason why I like doing it is because I feel like it's as real as life is going to get. There is no happy ending. Like, I grew up with Disney too. I grew up with everything a kid would grow up with. All your cartoons and all that kind of stuff, right? But when I got into high school, I came upon this movie. And it was a Japanese movie. And I talked about it last episode. It's called Tayu no Uta. And it was one of my favorite movies because it was about a girl who had a passion for music. And I could relate because at that time, my passion was film. And so I could relate. But she had a severe allergic reaction to the sun. So she couldn't go out. So she felt like her entire life was kind of like given up on her. Mm-hmm. So she tried to make the best with the situation that she had. So she pursued her life as a musical artist at night. Mm-hmm. And to cut short, she dies at the end. And at the beginning of the movie, you already, at the beginning of the drama, you already know that she's going to die. Those are the kind of movies that I like watching, are the ones that you already know the ending, but you're there because you fall in love with the character. You fall in love with everything that that character does. Mm-hmm. So at the end of it, she left a legacy behind. She left a song. A song that many people listen to. And even to this day, when I listen to it, I think of that specific scene. And that was over 10 years ago for me. So I watched it maybe back in 2008, 2009. Mm-hmm. And that was over 10 years, and I can still remember it very, very vividly. And so for me, I like writing scripts, and I write a lot of scripts. And I know that you've even read some of my scripts.
Yeah.
And these scripts, maybe of, I think I have like 7 or so scripts right now. And of those 7, I think like 3 of them are actually complete. The others are just ideas that are formed together on a piece of paper. But of those 7, only one of them has a happy ending. All of the other ones have a very realistic ending. And one of those, and the reason why I do it that way and why I love writing that way is because it's real. It's the truth that exists within our lives. I've experienced many close people to me pass away. And so when you see that, your perception of life and your perception of death are skewed now. Mm-hmm. It's no longer the Disney. It's no longer the way you look at Disney. You know, it's about this girl who's got nothing and she becomes a princess. It's not about that.
Yeah.
So when I write these stories, I write in mind of the reality that exists within these characters as well.
But don't you think it's a little too realistic? Like, for me, I don't... It's not that I hate your scripts, okay? Your scripts are very... You know, they're very beautifully written, okay? Like, I understand the picture. And then, because of how descriptive you like to make it. So, as you're reading it, you really get, like, the idea, the image of what you're trying to get across. But it's too realistic that, because I'm a very emotional person, that's why I don't like watching movies like that. But because of how realistic it is, don't you think it kind of like, I guess, like scares you sometimes because of how close it is to reality?
It scares me all the time. But I think that's what makes it beautiful, is that when it scares people, it's not a horror film. But it scares people because it's so real. These are things that happen. These are things that will happen. These are things that exist in our lives that, like, you want to forget. But I want to remind people with these scripts and these, and I eventually hope to sell these scripts and make these scripts a real thing, is I want people to watch it with the intention of being scared. Be scared of your own life and to be scared of what actually exists. The scariest thing in life is not death. The scariest thing in life is not living and leaving behind those that are still living. That is why I love my scripts, is because those two things are always are always points that I make in my scripts. Mm-hmm. So I have a script called Polaroid, and it's one of the most complete scripts that I have from start to finish. The reason why I love that script so much, not only is it my first ever script that I've ever written, but it is a very real script about what true love is. It's not about boy falls in love with girl, girl falls in love with boy. It's about boy falls in love with girl, sacrifices everything. Girl falls in love with boy, sacrifices everything. So what do you have at the end?
you have nothing. When one dies, what do you have? You have nothing. That's the truth of it. When I think about love, that's what love looks like to me. Is that if, like, for example, if you were to die tomorrow, what would I have today? I have you. And I've had you for how long now? 7 years. I've had you for 7 years back to back, every day of those 7 years. So if I lose you tomorrow, what do I have? I've built my entire life on you. Even we got married. There was a commitment. So do I ditch that commitment and go look for other love? It's still too fresh. It's still too new. Right? So that's why I write like that, is because the truth of life is that you should be scared. Be scared that you're not living, and be scared that when you pass, you'll leave those that love you. And so, like, especially with, like, I have a couple, right? So I have Polaroid, and then I have, what is it? Polaroid, I have Heaven, I have Last Letter, Heartbeat, Voicemail, Sign, and Last Wish. So of those, the only one that ends up happy is Sign. But it doesn't start happy. It starts with two people that have deformities and have disabilities and don't know how to cope with it because the people around them couldn't cope with it. So in their entire lives was built around a destructive way of looking at their deformities. They themselves are deaf. They cannot speak. So how do you, as an individual, when I write these scripts, I put myself into these characters, and that's why I try not to write too many scripts, is because when I do it, I get very depressed. When I write these scripts, I become very depressed. I take on these characters and I take on how they should feel. That's why when I write these scripts, it's literally almost, it comes in bolts of time. Because when I do write these scripts, I dream about it and it becomes real.
Yeah.
It becomes very real to me. If I was born deaf and everyone around me said, I can't live with you because I can't communicate with you. I don't know how to communicate with you. Me as the deaf person would be frustrated. I'd be so frustrated at them. I'd be frustrated at myself for having it. I would wish to God every day for something to happen to me so that at least I could start a new life somewhere. And so when I write these scripts, I write it in the perspective of each character that is being played. That is why when I write these, it's very vivid to me. It's very descriptive. Even the way someone runs their hands through someone's hair. It's very vivid to me because I am running my hand through that character's hair. I know what it smells like. I know what it looks like. I know what it would look like if I were to close my eyes and open it again and see that character right in front of me, who that character looks like. Because when I look at life, that's how vivid life is to me. It's real to me. You know, waking up and knowing how hard life is. I'm only 28, so life isn't even as hard as it will get later on in my life, but I can see it. Like this morning, I had a dream right before I woke up. Stupid as hell, but it was very beautiful, and I could really feel it. And like, you always laugh at me when I say I want a monkey. Yeah, like you always laugh at me when I say I want a monkey. But today, I don't know what it was. It was like I was in a movie. And like, I wasn't me. I was a kid. I was some random kid. And I felt this emotion of, yo, this is my best friend. Like, this monkey was like my best friend, bro. But then at the end, something happened and this monkey got hurt. And I think something happened and they were going to take the monkey away. And so I don't know who I am, but I'm, this monkey's in a cage. and it's trying to rip the bars off, and it's looking at this kid, and I can see the monkey looking at me. And the moment it looked at me, I woke up with, I jolted up out of bed, and I woke up with tears in my eyes. And so I was thinking, I'm like, oh shit, like, it's happening again. The stages of my my creative process happening again. When I have these kind of dreams, I know it's time for me to write. Whether it be about a monkey, whether it be about whatever. Whatever, I just, when I have dreams like this, it becomes very vivid. It becomes very real. And it becomes very hard to sleep because I'm not sleeping. Like with Heaven. That's been a project. That's been a project of mine for 2 years now. Mm-hmm. 2 to 3 years now.
Yep.
And the reason why it takes me so long is because these concepts that I come up with, I want them to be as real as possible. With Heaven, it's about a girl who loses her mom very young and doesn't have a dad around. But her whole conception of heaven is miscued. It comes from a perspective of a little girl who now questions, is heaven a good place? Then if it is, then why'd you take my mom? So and this is why I say it's super hard for me to write, is because when I think about it in that position, I have to lose my mom in my head. I have to sit there in the position of a kid that loses their mom and now has to question God, has to question everything that we are told about as kids. And then so that process is taking a long time because each character development develops into something else that I want to be a part of the story. So a lot of these, they come out as short films, but then as I sleep, it progresses more into almost like a film, mm-hmm. You know? Like, for me, I always find my inspirations from just random things that I see. You know, it could be walking outside and then looking at a kid, like, hugging his dad. Oh, shit, I like that. Okay, you know, I want this kind of personality for my character. I want this kind of thing for my story. One of the most recent ones that I had was Heartbeat. And it's a very, like, short film. And it's about this dad who, his son gets into a car accident. And it's from the whole perspective of this kid. He's just asleep, so you don't see anything. It's just black.
Yeah.
But he can hear everything. And then he hears his mom and his dad crying. And then the perspective changes. And it goes to a perspective of the viewer looking down at everyone. And it's about how this dad is going to give his kid his heart. And then the last thing that he gifts his kid is going to be a video. And so this kid wakes up. And then his mom is sitting at the bedside crying. And then he wakes up. And then he looks at his mom and asks his mom, where's dad? And then he gets the video. And the video is basically this dad just saying to his kid, you're like, you're the man of the house now. You're like, your mom is your responsibility. And these are things that, like, maybe I'll see something. Maybe I'll see someone else's concept of what this is, but now I want to change it into my perspective. What that could look like from my perspective. You know, as someone who comes from a very strong family sense, you know, background.
Yeah.
What that would look like from my perspective. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, like, so these are things that I take very seriously in my scripts and very seriously in my stories. I want to relay these messages to kids and to people. That's why I was such a, I don't want to say sentimental kid, but I was a very odd kid, because when I looked at things, I looked at it from a perspective, not from me, but from other people. Mm-hmm. So like even growing up, like in high school, when we would walk to school, I was very sentimental because whenever I would walk with friends or something, I would walk on the outside and not the inside. Mm-hmm. And I've always done that since I was a kid. I don't know where I saw it from. I don't know where it was. But then I understood why. Because you don't want someone that you care about walking close to cars. So I've always done stuff like that where my because I didn't have friends and because my parents were Asian, so we didn't get to go out, my best friend was just watching movies. And so I grew up with this kind of stuff. And maybe that's why, you know, I went to school for film and whatever, because I did find a passion for, you know, script writing. I remember my first script that I ever wrote in high school, I still have it to this day, is a voicemail. And it's about, I wrote this in grade 12. And I still want to create it. I just need to rebuild on it now that I'm, you know, a little more experienced and can write. Mm-hmm. It's literally about this guy who is, like, you see him chipper, like, happy. He goes to buy flowers. And he's supposed to meet his girlfriend at this park. And then as he's crossing the road to the park, he gets hit by the car. But he's on the phone and he leaves a voicemail for his girlfriend. His girlfriend is reading a book and she didn't see the phone call. So on the phone call, like he's joking with her saying, oh, you know, like I'm going to be late. But he's literally like right behind her. And it's about this guy who loves his girlfriend so much. Everything that he has on him is for her. And so the last thing that she has is him dying on the phone. And so she keeps that. And years go by and she can't date anyone. She keeps playing this voicemail over and over. And then that's it. And then at the end, it cuts to black. And then you hear on the phone him get hit by the car. And then him just silently say, at least I had you before I died. That was it. And I wrote like this since I was in grade 12 already. That's over 10 years for me of me writing scripts like in this format. For me, I don't like happy endings. I don't know why. Happy endings are not, you know.
It's because you don't. It's not that you. How do I say this? You always say this to me, is that you don't believe in happy endings and that they're really fake.
Yeah.
Because if there was a happy ending, you would have had it already. Because you've worked so hard up until this day.
Yeah.
You know, like all your hard work, all the time and effort you put into everything that you do, if there was a happy ending, you would have gone.
Yeah. And I don't even think it goes.
I don't think it's, you know, it sounds selfish when saying that, but that's how I feel. But for me also is that I prefer happy endings because I can't handle something when it's too sad.
You know, and I get that. Like, even for me, like, maybe I get it from my mom too, because my mom likes watching movies like that. My mom loves watching, like realistic endings. I think realistic endings for me are just happier for me. And I mean in a sense where it's comforting for me.
Because you know it's real?
Yeah. That if I blind myself to think, yo, I'm going to be a prince one day. You know, I'm going to be born into money. Money's going to come falling into my lap. I'm going to have, you know, the best happy ending love story that a man can ever have. It's like playing a mind game on myself. Mm-hmm. It's an expectation that you think is going to happen. And so you live your life thinking, okay, this is going to happen. This is going to happen. This is going to happen. But if I keep it as real as I can for myself, understanding what death is, you know, I grew up like this. When my grandpa died, my uncles and my dad said to me that even his own brothers didn't love him enough. Okay, so that's real to me. I grew up thinking like that. I grew up thinking, yo, like, I have to make a name for myself. I have to build a legacy. My grandpa built a legacy. So I cannot forget his legacy. My dad built a legacy. I cannot forget his legacy. You, even when we started dating, I told you about how proud I was of my last name. Mm-hmm. And so being like that, it was kind of just like, okay, everything I do is because one day this last name is going to mean something. And then so it just, for me, I want to keep it as real as possible because then I can't fool myself. Fool myself when something happens. You know, it's like how we said it in one of our other podcast episodes. I can't live my life being up on guard all the time. It gets tiring. But I can live my life knowing that I'm going to be as true to myself as I can. Mm-hmm. And the people that come to me, whether they are true or not, I'm ready to take on all of that. And so I guess it's translated over to all of my scripts where it's like, in the moment, these people are happy. Or they're born understanding certain things about their life. And when these people are born with a certain expectation or a certain way of thinking about their own lives, they keep it as real as possible because they can't get hurt more than they already are. I have Heaven. Mm-hmm. Heaven is one of the most extensive scripts that I've worked on. And one of the biggest ones that I'm working on. Because it has varying parts of it that relate to me. So this character is a girl, but the way she thinks and the way she acts and the way she looks at things, I guess I must have put myself into that character just a little bit. The way she questions God, the way she questions things, the way she acts. Like for me, when she loses her mom and she starts questioning her religious beliefs, is heaven a good place? It's a question that you have to ask yourself, right? When you lose someone and people say, it's okay, he's up in heaven. Is it comforting to know that heaven took him?
No. No, it's not. It doesn't.
Because the truth of the matter is now you fucking hate heaven. Heaven shouldn't have taken him. God shouldn't have taken him. That's the reality of it. To be comforted by the words that these people say to you all the time, oh, he's in a better place. What place is better than me? What place is better than him with his family? What place is better than right here with people that love him more than where he's going? You don't know. These are the realities of our human emotions.
Yes, but there's also the other side of, for example, is if that person is sick and they've been sick for a very long time, they've been fighting it, you know, trying to get better. But eventually, that spirit of fighting stops.
Oh yeah, no.
You know, like there's that portion where you know, like, yeah, you know, heaven sounds like a great place because now they're no longer in pain. They're no longer hurting. They don't have to deal with society's pressure of trying to live.
Mm-hmm. No, and I get that, you know, and I've written a couple scripts like that too. But maybe from the way I've come to it is, if God is this almighty person who has the abilities to create, the abilities to watch, then why did you give him the problem? Why do you give anyone problems? If we are your children, then why must you make us suffer? For us to suffer, you as our father would suffer too. You as our father must look at your child the way we look at ours. You know, like, for example, like if you're a mother and you lose your child, you just watched your child die right in front of you. Mm-hmm. So as a person who looks at God this way, you are my father. You are our father. We are your children. So why? If heaven is this beautiful place for people to rest, beautiful place for people to find sanctuary, then why is our Father doing this? I always write my scripts like that. You know, my scripts have always been about the realities of it, the realities of religion to me. Like, I'm not Christian, but I like reading about religion because it's fascinating to me to see what similarities lie in all religious beliefs. I don't want to just believe in one. I want to be able to read it all, see it all, and hear from people from different religious beliefs, right? Only then will one day I truly understand more about my footsteps and where they've come from. Like, I think this is where I find it very hard to write scripts, is because I take on these characters so much that it becomes very draining to me. Like, Polaroid was something that I spent quite a bit of time working on. I spent almost 2 years working on that. Mm-hmm. And it's like you said, I had you read my script. And I even posted it on boards for other people to critique and read it. And I had a lot of great reviews. And a lot of people wanted to see it. But I think what I'm scared of is the vision that I have in my head is too beautiful that I don't want to screw it up. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I think it's because you've worked so hard on it and you've imagined every single detail to even how you want the characters to look like. I know how you are. You're almost like a perfectionist where, because you've put so much time and effort into it, it's perfect in your eyes. If you were to allow somebody to work on it or buy it off you and then they just don't do it justice, it hurts. It hurts you as a writer because you spent so much of your time and energy doing it. You know, like, this is what you love to do.
Mm-hmm. That's why, like, the one script idea that I woke up one day and, like, I even told you about, and like, I had this idea for a while where it was about this person and they just wake up and they wake up in the hospital. Mm-hmm. And they see this girl standing right beside them. And the whole concept of it is that that girl is their angel ready to take them onto the other life, but to get them ready for it. And I even said to you that the angel, I have a very specific way that angel looks. Because to me, if I wanted to pass on, and I wanted to pass on knowing that everything was going to be okay, it had to be a very specific looking girl to calm me down You know, I don't want a Scarlett Johansson looking kind of girl. I want someone that's like 5'2". I want someone that's
like a mundane looking girl.
Like a very
like a normal.
Yeah, like a person. Normal, but she got a little charm to her. She got a little cute to her. Mm-hmm. Because when I pass on and I see that, yo, of course, your nerves are going to be calm now.
You want someone who, it's like you said earlier, you want someone to be able to calm you down because you're facing death already. You're already at death's door.
Yeah.
You want someone to be able to be like, hey, you know, like, it's okay.
Like, if I were to, okay, so let me paint this picture for you, okay? You don't know you're dead, but there's a guy next to you. And he's going to tell you that you're dead. And he's going to tell you that he's your angel and he's going to take you. What does he look like to you? Would you want him to look a super sexy buff man? Or would you want him to look like a normal looking guy? Just a normal looking guy. But he has a very calming, cute look that allows for you to feel some kind of comfort in him. To feel okay with the way he's going to say these things to you.
You know what the thing is, though, is that I feel like if I were to die later on, I think the person I want to see to take me or guide me through that is I would actually want to see my loved one. Like, it sounds weird when I say that, but it's almost comforting to me. Is seeing someone who I care about and I love tell me that, you know, hey, you know, like, you're dying. Like,
you know, and I thought about that too, because in that story that I wrote, the guardian angel takes him. And he takes him to see his mom. And he's trying to get his mom's attention, but he can't. And so he looks at the guardian angel and he says to her, why can't she see me? And so you kind of just see her look drop. And he says to her, she says to him, you died protecting someone. You died throwing someone out of the way of a, you know, like an accident. And what I'm trying to do is kind of just let you say your final goodbyes. And I thought about it. Do I want that person to be someone that he loves? That guardian angel to be someone that he loves? And I thought about it too, right? Was, okay, if I'm sitting in his shoes and I were to close my eyes and I think about it, would I want you to be the one to tell me that you're my guardian angel? And I thought about it. And then I said, no. Because why would I want to leave now? You're still alive to me. I wouldn't want my dad, like, let's say, for example, my dad or someone passes away. I wouldn't want them either. I wouldn't feel no comfort in it. I wouldn't feel no comfort in it. And it's one of those situations where, you know how they say on a plane, you'll spill out your life to the person next to you because after that, you're just gone your separate ways. Mm-hmm. It's one of those moments for me where it's like, let me spill it to a random person. Because I'm never going to see you again in my life. Whether it be you're a guardian angel, I'm never going to see you. It's done. I don't know you. You don't know me. Let me spill my life. Let me cry. Let me bawl my eyes out. Let me scream at you. Because it's done after that. But I can't do that if it's like a person that I know. If it's a person that I find very comforting to me. I can't do that. I can't scream at them. I can't be angry at them. I can't be sad at them. You know, that's why, like, when I write these scripts, I write it in a way where each character is played in a very specific way. The way they walk, the way they talk, the way they wave their hands, the way this character runs his hands through someone's hair. It has to be a very specific way to me. Because these things matter at the end. Like for
You know, like for one of my scripts, it's about this delinquent kid. And he gets one last chance. The judge tells him, okay, you're going to have to volunteer at a hospital. And so he does. But while he's there, he meets a little girl. He meets an 8-year-old cancer patient. And then he meets the nurse. But the whole story and the whole premise of it was, you know that 8-year-old's going to die. That's the whole premise of it. The moment you meet her, I want everyone to know she's going to die. So you're already trying to embrace the fact that at the end of this, you're going to be balling. That's an 8-year-old kid, bro. The problem with it is that it's not only the fact that you know that kid's going to die, but you only just started it. You only just started it. So you have this whole relationship that's going to be built from the beginning all the way to the end. So how strong is that relationship going to get? And then throughout the film, it does grow. But now it grows into this 8-year-old kid teaches this delinquent kid what it's like to be a good kid, to be a sentimental kid, to take his anger and place it somewhere else that matters. And this 8-year-old kid understands the concept of death already. So as a guy, as a 28-year-old kid, I'm looking at an 8-year-old kid looking at him and saying, and as they're talking to me about death and comforting me about them dying, I feel like shit. You would feel like shit. I want my audience to feel like shit. I want them to know, holy shit, an 8-year-old kid has grasped the realities that they exist in. There's not a fairy tale for them. They know they ain't gonna get, they know they ain't gonna fall in love. They know they ain't gonna get married. They know they ain't gonna have kids. They know that they can't be like other kids. But this whole journey was never about him falling in love with the nurse. It's about the relationship between the 8-year-old kid and the delinquent, and the 8-year-old kid teaching him what love looked like. Real love, not the I fall in love with a girl. It's real love. Love for a child. To look at a child and be like, shit, if I could ask God to give me your cancer, I would do it. So that you can live at least to my age and be okay. You know, these are things that I look at and I want people to relay. I want people to understand, people to feel it. I want people to hurt. That's what's so beautiful about my scripts. I've had so many people tell me, oh my God, those scripts are so depressing. Those scripts are so sad. It is. But it's also the most beautiful thing that I think a story could tell someone. To be told that even at, like, let's say 28, you know shit all. That 8-year-old knows more than you. That would make people, my viewers, look at it and be like, oh shit, do I know anything? Start questioning their life, to look at things, to change perspective on the way things are dealt with, the way things look like, the way things really are. Because like that story there, I had to stop because it was too real for me. I started putting myself into this position of this delinquent. Why? Because I was a delinquent when I was a kid growing up. I was very rebellious against my parents. When I wanted something, I would do it. So I had to put myself in a position like, okay, if I'm this delinquent and, okay, my situation's worse, what would help me change? Because I know what helped me change my life now. And it was an extreme too. It took an extreme to help me change and flip my perspective on life. So what extreme is going to help a delinquent kid that's even farther than me change his life? Oh, okay, let's put a dying girl in. But not just a dying girl. I want to put a, like an 8-year-old.
someone that you're going to fall in love with. The character, that character alone, the audience will fall in love with it the moment they see her. Someone that, yo, she is already, she knows she's going to die. But someone that's quirky, someone that's hilarious, someone that's full of energy. Because by the end of it, you'll see all that energy be depleted. That funny girl is no longer funny. That happy girl is no longer happy. So you just start stripping away everything from that character throughout the movie. And as a storyteller, I want to be able to tell people and show people, make them hurt every time you see something. You know? And these are things that, like, I pride myself in, is being able to storytell. Because I know I'm good at it. I know that this is something that I was meant to do. I have so many of these scripts, you know, like Polaroid, Last Wish. Like, Last Wish is with that, the one with the cancer kit. And that one was, that one derived off, I can't remember what it was, but it was about, so the delinquent kid, he's a delinquent because he loses his mom early in his life. So he's a kid that's constantly running because he doesn't want to go back into the system. But he does one thing that his mom teaches him, is to write down on a piece of paper something that he wishes he could have. Crumple it and throw it. And so he teaches this 8-year-old kid that. And so every day, she'll write something and she'll throw it. And he'll sneak in every day to go and find these pieces of paper. And he does that for her. So one day she says, oh, I want a pink hippo. So he goes and he finds a pink hippo doll. And every night he'll put it there. And he wants this girl to believe in something now. To give her something to believe in instead of, you know, constantly being berated by these negative thoughts that she has. And then the last wish is, I want my brother to be happy knowing that I'm going to die. And he just breaks down. He just cries. Because this delinquent kid who's on his own, that has his own life before all this, who's been on his own, now he realizes, oh shit, how can I be happy? I had nothing before her, and now I have her, and now I know she's gone. That's what I love about my storytelling. It's so intricate. It's so beautiful. It's so beautifully placed. These small narratives. The audience already knows what's going to happen. That's what I love about it. It's not those stories where it's a twisted end. I love movies like that where they twist the end. Yeah, you know, I watch a lot of like Korean films that twist the end of their movies, and you're sitting there at the edge of your seat like, oh shit, I didn't see that happening. But I want people to know what's going to happen already. The moment you start the film is the moment you know what's going to happen right at the end. But I want them to be so immersed in the characters that you know what's going to happen, but you fall deeper in love only to be broken at the end. As broken as the character is, I want my audience to be as broken as that. To take away what it felt like. Those are the most beautiful stories that I think, like, I've learned something from. Is a story that can teach people perspective, reality, and strength. When you look at people and, you know, you're just like, oh man, you feel worthless. And then those are the most beautiful stories. Not ones that give you strength, because how many people have strength? How many people have the ambition to do something? But when you're stripped of everything, how many people can do something then? No?
Yeah.
These are, you know, as simple as, like, my stories are and as sad as they are. And, like, I've heard it so many times. Oh, my gosh, your stories are so sad.
I think they're beautifully sad, but because, you know, I'm not saying that, you know, my life is the saddest out there. No, by far, it's not. But because I have been surrounded by sadness for so long, I don't want to be sad anymore. Like, every time I get sad, it really just, it, like, affects me so much. That's why when I, like, watch movies or when I do things, I try to be happy and I try to watch happy things so that I'm not constantly reminded about all the sad things and all the troubles that I've gone through, or something that's allowing me to get to that dark place. That's why I personally don't prefer to watch sad movies.
I've thought about that too. But then when I look at it from a perspective of, so when I write these scripts, I write it in different viewpoints. So I write it as the main character, the supporting character, and then almost like a perspective of God. And why I do that is because as the main character, I don't know what's happening. As a supporting character, I know that, like, for example, I know that I have cancer. But as God, I'm watching this shit go down, and I'm learning that, wow, my child who has cancer appreciates life and lives their life day to day, smiling, knowing what's coming. And I want people to do that, no matter how sad life is. To appreciate the small things makes it worth every aspect, every bad thing that will happen. Like, for example, like heaven. What she learns at the end is not to blame God. She learns to understand God. And what I mean by that is, at the end of heaven, so in heaven, there's this homeless man that she keeps giving money to at the end. Like, just pass by, give him money. And then at the end, she breaks down. She breaks down right in front of him and says, I give you money every day because that's what my mom used to do. I'm holding on to the last thing that my mom has left in this world. And so this homeless man looks at her and he pulls the jar of money and he goes, this is what you and your mom have given me. And then he pulls back the blanket and he shows his kid and he goes, that's also what your mom and you have given me. And she just bawls her eyes out. And the whole point of that scene was to show people that it's more than what we look at. It's more than what we see. What we are trying to hold on to things that we can't hold on for long. How long before that thing drives us into the ground, drives us over the edge? It's not about that anymore. It's about looking at things past that. This homeless man was able to show her that by pulling out that jar and pulling the blanket and saying, like, look, this is what your mom and you have done. Been able to support my child. The child goes to school. The child wears normal clothes. That's the beauty of it. It's not what we see. It's what we've done to help other people. To come to terms with letting go of certain things that need to be let go now. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that's why beautiful, sad endings for me are the best. Because happy endings don't teach you anything. Happy endings, they teach you that, they teach you an unrealistic view of love and life. You know, a lot of people go into, and I always say this, is a lot of people, a lot of couples go into a relationship thinking, oh, it's going to be so easy. And then when it comes down to it, and then you got to make sacrifices as a couple. You know, like for us, the beginning of our relationship for almost 3 years was you, me, and then your sister. So taking your sister everywhere we went. You wanted a date night? Okay, she had to come. But then we as people don't look at it further than that. But now we look at it and we look past it. We have a stronger relationship with your sister now. Mm-hmm. We don't see it. We didn't see it. But these are things that are real. This is real life. And sometimes you can't hide real life. Sometimes hiding real life is only an illusion. Mm-hmm. But how long before the illusion collapses and real life stomps on you? That's why each and every one of my stories and every one of my scripts is written the way it's written. You know, like even Sign, like I said, Sign is, it has a beautiful ending. But for it to be beautiful, it had to have a really horrible beginning. I wanted these characters to hate themselves. I wanted these characters to dread themselves. I wanted these characters to want to die. I want them to die because that's how we as humans are. How many times a day does someone say, I want to die today? Yep. Now you're going to relate to a character that wants to die. But this character has less than you. This character, one of them can't speak. One of them can't see. So it's a love story about someone who can't see and someone who can't speak. It's a love story about perspective. It's a love story about real life problems. How one can assist the other and the other can assist the one. These are things that I find very beautiful about life. Is that you're not going to find your perfect man or your perfect woman. You're not. Mm-hmm. That shit don't exist. Your relationship will have problems. That shit exists. But running away from your problems and running away from these people that hurt you and are in pain around you is not going to help. The more you run, it's like an elastic band. Keep pulling that elastic band and one day it's going to snap. Mm-hmm. But would you rather it snap closer to you or farther away from you? Because one day it's going to snap real far and it's going to hurt.
Yeah.
And it's one of those situations where you are the one that's been pulling that rubber band, so you know what's going to come. Mm-hmm. When you release it, you're just sitting there like, I'm ready. I know it's coming. And these are things that, like, I want to teach people. You know, like, the view on love, view on life, view on what it really is like to live. It's not beautiful. It's not anything like that. Life itself is not beautiful. It's the moments that we make out of life that become beautiful. You know, and like, that's something that I always say is, life is not beautiful. It's what we make out of life that is beautiful. Time is not beautiful. It's the moments that we capture in time that stay beautiful. These are concepts that I live by and I put into my scripts. I hope you enjoyed this episode a little bit, you know, deeper into my mindset and the way I look at things and my creative process when I write things. So I hope you enjoyed this episode. We apologize. We were locked down again, so we couldn't get the guest this week, but we'll look into doing it again when everything starts opening up. Thank you to everyone listening. This is your host and co-host signing off. Bye-bye.